It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Now to RSV and why this respiratory illness is on the rise in Wisconsin and across the nation. RSV stands for respiratory syncytial virus. It's been in the news lately because doctors see many more cases than normal this time of year. It usually circulates from late December to mid-February, according to the CDC, causing more than 2 million children under age 5 to go see the doctor. And each year, RSV leads to tens of thousands of hospitalizations for this age group. Join in on RSV, 800-642-1234. Dr. Raj Nayak is a pediatrician at Gunderson Health System on the board of the Wisconsin chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics. Dr. Nayak, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Good morning. WPR was in contact yesterday afternoon with the State Health Department to get the latest numbers, and we learned 1,280 cases of RSV were identified last week in Wisconsin compared to 810 the previous week. And DHS told us they expect those numbers to rise. So, you know, with Gunderson, with clinics and hospitals across three different states, what are you seeing at hospitals in your system?
Yeah, we're certainly starting to see a rise in the number of cases, not unexpectedly. The reports of cases on the East Coast were rising for several weeks. And so there's usually a spread across the country in a predictable pattern. So we've been expecting the rise here in the Midwest for a number of weeks.
What are common symptoms of RSV? What is it like?
Yeah, it has quite a range of symptoms. For the people that are not as susceptible, it's probably going to just look like a very bad cold. So lots of runny nose, congestion, cough. But there are certain populations, particularly younger children, and especially those that have some risk factors like prematurity or forms of congenital heart disease, that may be more severely affected. And then there's adults that are in the elderly population or more at risk for respiratory illness that are also at risk for significant consequences. So you can think of this infection as one that affects the two spectrums of age.
How does RSV spread, and why in the winter months or the cooler times of year?
Yeah, so it's respiratory droplet spread, which means that it's the small little droplets produced by coughing or sneezing that predominantly spread this infection. This is a respiratory virus like many others that has a seasonal epidemic pattern. And the most common times, and you mentioned it in your opening, that it's typically a wintertime virus, but there are some years where it starts in the fall and some that continues even into the later spring. So obviously when we're in colder climates indoors, we tend to spread more respiratory infections because we're in closer contact with one another.
I wonder, is RSV contagious before the symptoms develop?
Yeah, you know, like a lot of viruses, there is a contagious period. The early, it might be a little bit infectious right before, but certainly during the early phase of illness, it's also quite infectious. And it's so infectious that, you know, if you look at children, pretty much by the age of 2 years, all children have had at least one RSV infection. I should have mentioned earlier that some of the severe complications, so these susceptible children, what it happens is it causes inflammation in the little small airways that lead down to the lungs. And in those susceptible children, then it can cause more severe respiratory illness, including wheezing, you know, some respiratory distress where they need oxygen or other support. And so that's the risk is that these lower respiratory tract infections can end up being quite severe, leading to hospitalization or worse.
Yes. At what point when these what seem like basic cold-like symptoms really escalate, what symptoms mean a child should visit the pediatrician?
Yeah, I usually talk about it in three basic severe symptoms that should prompt a visit. One is if they have feeding troubles. Sometimes the children are working so hard to breathe that they can't feed well and they become dehydrated. The second is if they have enough distress where they're working extra hard to breathe and they just need extra support, including oxygen or other support. And then the third, which happens in the smallest babies, is called apnea, where there's a pause in their breathing, of course, a longer pause than normal, where these apneic episodes can lead to much more severe consequences. So those are the three most severe symptoms that I would say prompt immediate evaluation.
Can the coughing and wheezing from RSV, can that lead to other complications or longer-term breathing problems?
Yeah, there are a percentage of children that have these early wheezing illnesses that, and this is included with RSV as well as other respiratory infections, that go on to have chronic wheezing, and ultimately some of them go on to have asthma. So that's a known association with a lot of early respiratory illnesses.
So, if the infant, the baby, or the toddler is hospitalized, what is a standard treatment of care for RSV?
Yeah, for treatment, there is no cure. The typical treatment is really just supportive care. And so that could include things like hydration with an IV, so intravenous hydration. It can include oxygen or other respiratory support. In the most severe cases, they may need mechanical ventilation. But really, we just support them through until they can recover on their own.
Pediatrician Raj Nayak here with what we need to know about the respiratory illness RSV, with severe cases and hospitalizations rising. Join in on RSV, now the leading cause of infant hospitalizations in our country. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Recent data in the Journal of Infectious Diseases cites RSV as the leading cause of hospitalizations during the respiratory season for infants and young children. And now a maternal RSV vaccine is showing promise in Pfizer clinical trials and could be on the horizon. Still time to talk about the respiratory illness RSV. 800-642-1234. Gunderson Health System pediatrician Raj Nayak stays with us. Let's bring in Elizabeth in Wauwatosa. Hi, Elizabeth. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning. My daughter, back in 2008, she was a preemie. She was born at 32 weeks. And she was born in July. So with talking with the pediatrician, we were definitely going to be getting the RSV shot. We were lucky that a traveling nurse came each month to give her the little shot in her leg. But it was really difficult to have it approved through insurance. It's my understanding that each shot or each immunization is quite expensive. And back in 2008, they only approved three shots for her. And it was quite a battle with the insurance company to have them approve an October shot in addition to November, December, and January, and then even to approve a February, and I think I got a March shot out of there too. But it was quite a difficult time advocating through the insurance company. Is that still accurate now, and what's some direction on that?
Elizabeth, thank you so much. Elizabeth, I think talking about an antiviral for the premature infant, Dr. Nayak?
Well, actually, what she's talking about is a monoclonal antibody, which is different than an antiviral medication. And it's called palivizumab. And it has been around for a while. And it was a very astute question because it is still a challenge. The recommendations, because of the expense of this antibodies, are still limited to very high-risk populations of infants, and it does require a monthly injection. And really, when we're talking about these monoclonal antibodies, what they offer is something we call passive protection, which means you're actually giving antibodies that protect for the duration that they last, and you're not actually inducing the person that receives it to make their own antibodies. And so it is expensive. Insurance hurdles still exist to some degree, and they're limited to the highest risk children. But there is help on the way in terms of new scientific advances that hopefully are not too far around the corner, which could include other types of monoclonal antibodies that perhaps are going to be a little less expensive, and then the potential for true vaccines against RSV, which really will fight be a big help in the fight against RSV.
Yes, Elizabeth, thank you, because I think that is a perfect segue for this maternal RSV vaccine could be available, Pfizer said, as soon as next winter, and it would be given to pregnant people to protect children for the first 6 months of life. What impact could this potential new vaccine have on RSV spread?
Yeah, I think this is really helpful. So when we look at the most at-risk children, so there are children that die of RSV, and most of them are under the age of 6 months. And so what this study showed in the New England Journal of Medicine, published this spring, is that when this candidate vaccine was given to pregnant women between 24 and 36 weeks of gestation, they were actually able to pass on antibodies to their newborns that lasted at least 6 months and provided good protective levels of antibody response in those infants. So it really offers the potential to give this vaccine to late pregnancy women and protect their infants through this highest risk time. The other thing that we know about giving vaccines to mothers is, and this hasn't been shown yet, but we can hope for something we call cocooning, which is if you protect the people around the infants, particularly mothers, you can help protect the child by not allowing the mother to get infection as well. So I think there's two potential advantages to that strategy.
Talking about RSV and respiratory illnesses this season, Dr. Raj Nayak, pediatrician at Gunderson Health System. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Dr. Nayak, if RSV is related to the flu virus and there's COVID circulating out there in the community and at daycare and so forth, how should a parent react when their child falls ill or shows symptoms of something in their environment? What would be a parent's next steps?
Particularly challenging time. And, first of all, I wouldn't say they're related, but they're coexisting at the same time. And I think it is a challenging time for parents because influenza is out there right now, RSV at higher rates than average at this time of year. And then there are still COVID infections out there. And so you don't know which is which. And fortunately, testing has been readily available. And this is an occasion where in past years we would say, unless you have severe illness, you probably don't need to test for RSV or influenza, or unless you're high risk individual, you don't need to test. But these days with COVID, RSV, and influenza, I expect that we'll be doing more testing than we would typically to try to sort it out and prevent spread.
Nick emailed along those lines to ask, how can this impact people if they're COVID positive and have RSV?
Yeah, I think that remains to be determined, but we're certainly concerned about that. I think for several years or since the onset of the pandemic, there have been experts forecasting the possibilities of twindemic, or in this case, triple demic, and they hadn't yet come to be. We were doing other things, basic public health measures like more of the masking and distancing that maybe prevented those things from occurring. But I think certainly as people are acting more normally in society and doing less masking and certainly the distancing, there's potential for co-infections and more severe symptoms related to having multiple of these infections. So it is a risk, and something we'll have to see how it goes as the season plays out.
As the season plays out, we only have a few moments left, but what are you expecting from this year's flu season? The state health department says less than 12% of children under age 17 have gotten the flu vaccine this year.
Yeah, I am concerned about the slower rates of influenza vaccine administration. I'm hopeful that we can continue to spread the message and try to get people to do flu vaccine. Of course, we know it's not perfect, but it is a layer of protection that's important for everybody eligible, who includes everybody 6 months of age and older. So we'd highly encourage that. I know there's been some carryover of vaccine hesitancy related to people's feelings around COVID vaccine, but our goal is to keep everybody as healthy as possible. So I would strongly encourage everybody to get their flu vaccine if eligible, to try to prevent people from, suffering the consequences of these respiratory infections.
Dr. Nayak, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Dr. Raj Nayak is a pediatrician at Gundersen Health System. He's on the board for the Wisconsin chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.